We are going to talk with the author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Safe Online this hour, who will have advice for men and women on how to protect ourselves, our information, and our privacy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So how concerned are you about your online privacy? Have you ever had your personal information abused online? Have you been hacked or experienced identity theft? What do you do to keep safe on the internet? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Violet Blue. She is an investigative tech reporter for ZDNet and CNET and CBS News, as well as an award-winning sex writer and columnist. She is author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Online. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be on the show.
Thanks very much for being with us. So, why do you want people to be thinking about online privacy?
Well, with our online lives, we have less privacy than ever before, and I think much less than any of us realize. Today, we have social media sites, online dating, photo sharing, and mobile everything. And what that means is that sleazy marketers, unethical megacorporations, stalkers, and scam artists have all made us the last line of defense for our own privacy. At the same time, we have this growing sense of dread that we can't do anything to protect our privacy. We feel helpless, especially people who are non-technical. And so what I wanted to do was take all of the knowledge that I had from reporting on cybercrime and hacks. And I got together and worked with attorneys and psychologists and hackers, developers and tech employees to put together a practical guide to online privacy that doesn't require a huge amount of background knowledge.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. This book isn't just privacy. You call it the Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy. Why do women have to fear more online?
Well, what I wanted to do with the book was I didn't want to just write a guidebook for privacy. I didn't want to do, you know, the dummy's guide to online privacy. What I wanted to do was really address the hardest parts of protecting our privacy. And so what that meant was writing about protecting privacy for basically the internet's top targets, and that's women.
Yeah. How so? Why do you say that they are the top targets?
Well, women face online and in real life what is called the target non-target status. And so what that means is that when we walk into a room or when we're walking down the street, we face snap judgments about our sexual worth and about our sexuality. And it's not fair and it's not fun, but that's just a fact. And so what ends up happening is that people, the not nice people of the world, the trolls, the people who like to attack people, the people who like to cause problems for other people in life, seek us out first. They see us as targets. So when we enter like an online chat room or when we have even a female identity online, that's the first thing that these trolls and stalkers see. So they target us first. And what ends up happening is that because a lot of these online systems, a lot of these social networking sites are created by people who don't have a sense or an awareness of target non-target status, meaning unfortunately, a lot of these sites have been designed by men who just aren't aware of this, that, you know, their half of their users bear target status. What they've done is they've created a lot of systems and have ended up being used against basically what is half of their users. And I think that we're starting to see a consciousness shift around that, about the way that these sites are used against the most targeted people online. But until then, the people that are the most targeted online, which is women and LGBTQ people, need to really start to fight back. Like there need to be the last line of defense, as I say, and get control of our privacy back first.
Yeah. Can you give us an example? So those of us who maybe haven't been the target on a, you know, some chat group or some site, what exactly, how would I possibly be targeted and how do I fight back?
Well, there are a lot of ways that you could be targeted, and there are also a lot of ways that people of all genders and orientations can be targeted. This isn't just a problem for women, and it's not just women that get attacked by trolls and stalkers. All people get attacked by trolls and stalkers. It's just women more than most, unfortunately. And what these attackers can do is basically use these sites against you. They can take a look at all of the places on your profiles, or even not on your profiles, like on People Finder websites, where your personal information might be showing in places that you're not aware of. So, for instance, People Finder websites, they seem really harmless. They're the websites that you go to that say, you know, pay $1, pay $2 to do a background check on someone who might rent a property from you, or a background check on a potential date, or a background check on a potential employee. And these sites are basically scraper sites that do deals in the background with data salespeople, like marketing companies and advertising companies, and also social media websites that sell your private and personal information to these sites. And what they do is they compile dossiers on people. They compile basically files that have as much information about you that they can verify and put together. So, for instance, if someone wanted to target you and harass you and make your life really, really hard and or scary, they could go to a People Finder website, pay a very minimal fee, there's like no bar to entry for these sites, and get a bunch of information about you that you wouldn't want them to have. With that information, they could do a variety of very unsavory things. People Finder sites I address specifically in the book. There's an entire chapter on them, and I have a lot of resources as well about how to get yourself off these sites.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go along. But what personal information do we most need to protect?
Well, right now, it's basically everything, and it's a lot of things that people don't realize that they need to protect either. I mean, of course, naturally, you're going to think, I need to protect my home address. I need to protect, you know, things that could help people figure out where I work. And I think also a lot of people don't realize that there are ways that this information can leak out that we don't realize it. For instance, if we take a photograph that has something like our license plate in it, or a photograph in front of our house, you know, or we share a photograph on social media of us at work, you know, if we don't have the profiles that they're shared to set to private, we've announced to the world an easy way to figure out where we work or where we live. Another way that it happens as well, for instance, just showing this one vector of attack, you know, finding out where we are, is geolocation on photographs. There are a lot of apps that we use that will happily tag our geolocation to our photographs. It's information that's already in the photograph, by the way. And it's information that can be scrubbed off the photograph. But what it is it's basically background information in the file of the photograph itself that shows the location of where we've taken it. Now, if we don't make sure that our settings on all of the sites that we share these photographs on are set to not show our location, it's possible that this could broadcast our location or make it so that someone unsavory could take the file, you know, download the file off of our social media profiles and then look at the geolocation information on that file, if we haven't scrubbed it off. Yeah. So that's one way, and it feels like a giant wormhole, and it feels also very overwhelming that this one little innocent thing, taking a photograph, could reveal so much about where we are and who we are, and give someone who's trying to put together a negative profile on us more information than we're willing to share. But it's little things like that that I talk about in the book, that I teach you really simple tricks to be able to essentially undermine. So, and it's also, you know, not just things like that we're directly aware of, like, oh, we don't want people to have our home address. It's also things that we don't realize could also make us vulnerable to hacks and attacks.
Yeah, like what? I'm sorry, like what? I mean, what sort of information might we not think about that we absolutely should be thinking about?
Things like our phone number, things like our real name in conjunction with our phone number, things like our email address, especially our personal email addresses that we use with some of our more sensitive information or sensitive accounts. This is the kind of information that, you know, when a place gets hacked, when something like Target gets hacked or you know, OPM gets hacked, like some of the bigger hacks that we hear about where these giant databases of users are basically exposed to the Internet and exposed to identity thieves and other types of thieves online, this little piece of information, such as your phone number, especially in association with your real name or another piece of information that can tie it to you, this gets put into essentially dossiers that aren't just used by People Finder sites, but also by criminals online that engage in large-scale identity theft and things like that. So when you hear about something like, for instance, Snapchat, whose database was hacked about a year and a half ago and was maliciously exposed online, you know, I was talking to, I actually reported that, I broke that story, And I was talking to a couple. I was on the airplane, and I was telling them that that had just happened. And the man and the couple said, so what did they get? And I said, oh, they got names, they got phone numbers, and they got email addresses. And he was like, oh, it's my phone number. No big deal. Who cares about that? And the woman in the couple was like, uh-oh, it's my phone number. And that, to me, showed the big difference in the way that the genders have perceptions about privacy. But it also let me know that people weren't really aware about how much something as innocent as a phone number, you know, is actually part of a bigger piece of a puzzle that is a piece of information that they really need to protect.
Yeah, speaking of hacking, it's not exactly the same thing, but do you have some thoughts on Ashley Madison being hacked and now all of that information on this, I guess, adultery site being released to the public?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, you know, take whatever, you know, moral stances aside about what this site's about and what the people who are using the site were doing, it's a huge privacy nightmare. It's a privacy disaster for everyone who is in any way connected with that site. It's essentially not only a lot of people who had a lot of things to hide and wanted to have their privacy in doing whatever it is that they were doing with the site, but the way that it's been exposed so maliciously is kind of terrifying, because basically what's happened is that the people who attacked this site have with very malicious intent, exposed as much information as possible about the people who were using the site. So their information is being smeared all over the internet and back, and they're going to have, you know, unless they know how to basically lock down every bit of information that was in those profiles, they're going to be dealing with identity theft. They're going to be dealing with all kinds of crazy phishing and scams, and, you know, that they're going to be dealing with people using all that information to try and hack them, you know, try and brute force their passwords and get into their accounts. And it may seem like, oh, that's really hard to do in bulk, but that's not actually hard to do in bulk at all. Large amounts of groups of names and numbers. I mean, there are a lot of hacking crews, and especially a lot of organized crime in Eastern Europe that specialize in hacking large amounts of people to try and get every little piece of information and access that they possibly can on a large scale. So this is really bad. It's really bad. I mean, despite how we might feel about the victims, this is going to be really, really awful for them. And I haven't seen Ashley Madison, the company, admit that this has actually happened. They've said a lot of things about the breach. They've said a lot of things about, you know, that they have been criminally attacked, but they haven't actually admitted that their database has been put online. And I would like to see more accountability from that business in this instance.
We are talking with Violet Blue. She is the author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Safe Online. We welcome your questions for her. We welcome any experiences that you have with maybe having your privacy somehow abused online. Have you been hacked or experienced identity theft? What do you do to stay safe on the internet? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. So what privacy settings do you use on Facebook? Do you have a piece of tape covering your computer's webcam? Our guest this hour says even a phone number in the wrong hands can give us woe, and is giving us some advice on how to protect ourselves and our information online. She is Violet Blue, the author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Safe Online. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Before we take calls, Violet, how worried should we be? How afraid should we be that our information is going to get into the wrong hands?
Well, I think that we need to be cautious. I think that we don't need to be so terrified that we don't go online. And I don't think also that advice such as just don't use Facebook is going to work necessarily. We all have to use these tools now. These tools are part of the fabric of our daily lives. And that's just a fact. What needs to happen is just a simple consciousness shift about the way that we use these tools. A lot of people haven't really made the shift from understanding how real life, everyday privacy translates onto privacy online. I think a lot of people have had the perception that, you know, because it's online, it isn't real in a way. And I think we've also been lulled into a false sense of security and a false sense of trust for sites such as Facebook that have, you know, basically lulled us into this, you know, this like, oh, it's okay to share my information, or, oh, I am obligated to share my private information, or I must share certain pieces of information in order to be able to use these sites. And it's important for us to basically step back and look at that and say, actually, no, we don't need to give up our private information to use these sites. We can use these sites in a slightly different way that protects our privacy. And it's not a trade-off that we need to accept.
Yeah. For example, when you're talking about taking photographs and how our location can be embedded in that photograph, or we give, I guess I just did, I gave Facebook permission to tell people where I took that photograph.
You know, right.
And maybe I shouldn't have done that. So are you saying I should disable that, at least that ability that says, you know, Joy is at, you know, the beach right now?
Highly recommended if that's the kind of privacy that you want to protect. One of the things that my book does is that I go through all the different areas of our lives and what kind of pieces of privacy get exposed in those parts of our online lives so that you can go through like a checklist and essentially go, okay, I'm okay with people knowing this about me. I'm not okay with people knowing this about me. And I explain the different reasons why it might be okay for them to know this piece of information about you, or what context it might be okay for people to have your email address. And then I basically show you how to go through very simply, very easily online, go through and take stock of the places that your information is showing that you don't want to have showing, and then just start dialing it back or start changing those settings and changing that information. And it's a pain in the butt. It's like doing laundry. You don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. It takes time. It's like when you sit down and you have to change all your passwords for some reason. It's a drag. But it's the kind of thing that you just kind of have to bite the bullet and do. And then once you've gone through everything and you've reoriented your privacy perspective and gone through all your privacy settings on your social media sites and your apps and everything, then it's done. And you have your control back. You've got a handle back on the things that, you know, were sharing things possibly without your permission. Or you've gone through and you've found out that it wasn't sharing anything and you're in good shape.
Let's go to Jerry in Lake Mills first. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. I met a young fellow in the local library here, after hours of conversation with him over time, he seemed to be a pretty competent hacker. And he said to me that all a good hacker needs is the last numbers of your credit card or some numbers of the credit card, and they can reconstruct that in a matter of minutes, the entire number. And I see so many of these transaction slips hanging from the pump at gas stations that people have left behind with the last numbers of their credit card on it. And that seems extremely dangerous under the information that this man gave me.
Any comment on that, Violet?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that does sound terrifying, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he left out some important pieces of information that go with those last four numbers. And that's that all of the services that use credit cards and do payment transactions, and even services such as, you know, Apple iTunes, when you need to, you know, get something, you need to put your credit card in there to make the account. When those last four numbers are exposed, it's not really that bad because all of the services that use those, all of the ways that you would get that, the rest of the information that goes with that requires people to know a series of things in order to get those, the rest of the numbers that go with that. It's incredibly, incredibly hard to get the rest of the credit card number with those numbers. You would need the expiration date. You would need the number that's on the back of the card. You would also need additional information that's tied to that account. such as the email address, the name of the person who has that account, and other pieces of identifying information that they ask you for when you call in. So it's not quite as scary as he made it out to be.
Yeah, but everybody and their mother is reporting to me, because I just had it happen to me where somehow someone got my credit card number and was charging stuff somewhere else, and I had the card in my possession, and then all of a sudden everybody starts saying, you know what, that happened to me. That happened to me three times this year. You know, this presumably some of this is they're getting it through hack jobs or something.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and there are a couple of ways that you can directly lock down your credit that I think a lot of credit institutions don't want you to know about, because it prevents them from selling your information and having you marketed to. Mm. But one of the things that I recommend doing in my book, it's not very expensive. It's called placing a credit freeze on all three of the credit companies. So that's TransUnion, Experian, and what's the other one? Anyway, it's the three credit agencies. Mm-hmm. And you can do this on their websites. You can also, of course, call them, but it's easier on their websites. It costs $10 for each of the agencies. And what you do is you go online and you go to their websites and you find the area on the website. You can actually just Google credit freeze and the name of the institution. So like credit freeze and TransUnion. And then what you do is you go and you pay $10 and you tell them to freeze your credit. And so what that does, it doesn't make it so you can't use your credit cards or anything like that. But what it does is it means that no one can access your credit data unless you specifically give them permission. So what that means is that if you needed to, say, for instance, apply for a new credit card or, you know, get a loan or anything like that, you would need to unlock your credit. You'd need to unfreeze it. So you just contact the agency and get it unfrozen. But then you would be giving specific people permission to access the more sensitive parts of your credit files, rather than having it exposed and moved around and sold on the back end to all of these data dealers. So freezing your credit will help a lot. But as far as credit card theft goes, I mean, it's like you said, you know, we don't know anyone that hasn't had it happen to them at this point. And a lot of that is, I think, putting a lot of pressure on credit companies and a lot of pressure on, you know, companies that do basic credit card transactions like Target and things like that to really step up and get serious about protecting the privacy of their users, which I don't think they took as seriously before.
Let's go to Vicki in Spring Green next. Hello, Vicki.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that there are many parents out there who will use their children's credit and ruin their credit score before they come of age. And I just think that all Social Security numbers should be locked, and we should have to unlock them for the agencies to access our credit.
I've never really heard of such a thing, but what about locking our Social Security numbers, Violet?
Well, what will help in terms of our credit, specifically to what she's talking about, is to go ahead and do that credit freeze that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. That will lock that information down and make it so that people can't go and use someone else's credit. But most of the social media sites don't allow people to use them unless they're adults, you know, unless they're over 14 or 15. So I don't have much to speak to in terms of experience or knowledge about people creating profiles for underage people, which is obviously illegal, and using those to ruin an underage person's credit. But it does happen among adults. And like I said, there are just a couple things you can do to prevent that and to stop that from happening.
Yeah. What about Violet? What about just so many or I don't even know now. I mean, if some business asks for your Social Security number, can you just say no?
Yeah, and you probably should. I don't see any reason a business would be asking for your Social Security number unless it's specifically on a credit application or something that is, you know, something of that nature. And it absolutely is something that you shouldn't be giving up to, especially things like any social media sites, if anyone asks for that. You know, one of the things that I've been saying is, you know, you wouldn't, you know, if some random guy on the corner was asking for your ID, you wouldn't give it to him, would you?
Right.
But why does it make it any different if he says he works at Facebook? You know, and this is part of the sort of consciousness shift I'm talking about is like, okay, when these sites are asking for ID, you know, you really don't want to give it to them unless you absolutely know who you're handing this stuff to.
So, saying no is... I'm sorry. How should we go about assessing our online safety and what changes we might want to make when it comes to our online safety?
Well, there are a couple of different things, actually, that we can do. I was talking earlier about doing a self-inventory about privacy, you know, and that can be done just as simply as using quotes and Googling your name and making sure to check the images tab to see what comes up, Googling your own phone number, Googling your home address, Googling your social security number as well, and doing a Google reverse image search of your most recent shared photos of yourself. And then searching your name on People Finder sites, such as Spokio, US Searcher, and Taliaferro, to see what information is showing. And then don't panic if you see something you didn't realize was public. And definitely don't blame yourself for what these companies have done to your privacy. And remember that what's online doesn't have to stay visible forever. And there are ways that you can get that information moved, hidden, pushed down in search results, and removed altogether. And in terms of protecting your privacy right now, there's a lot of things you can do. I noticed that on the description for this show, you talked about taping over your webcam.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a simple trick, and I would love to explain why that's important to you.
Yeah, I was going to say that I actually that did scare me because I had no idea. So why should we put a piece of tape over our computer webcam?
It sounds silly, but it's such a great little privacy trick. So a year before Cassidy Wolf was crowned Miss Teen USA in 2013, a guy in her high school had hacked into the webcam of her home computer and took photos of her without her consent and without her knowledge. She found out only when he got into her social media accounts and tried to extort her. She later found out that she was one of 12 girls that he had done this to, that he had taken photos of and threatened for cash. And so what was happening was that this guy had basically, he thought he was some fancy hacker, but he had basically bought a very, very, what is a very cheap hacking program on black market forums that allows people to hack into your webcams. And those basically allow them to trigger your webcam without the little light going on, so you actually don't know that it's on. And this creep had been doing this to girls in her class. And she stood up to him. She decided not to knuckle under and pay his extortion fees or go along with it, and essentially helped bust this guy. And so that was when we really started to understand like how widespread webcam hacking had become. And it later came out that in forums, guys sell and trade these photos like crazy. Of course, photos of women are worth more money, which is really gross to think about. And the way that you can basically stop this from happening, the way you can subvert this hack, is simply by putting a piece of tape, a post-it, or even a lightly adhesive sticker over your webcam. That way, if someone did decide to do that to your webcam, they couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's just shocking. I do remember hearing about this in the news, but for those who aren't familiar, you explained it, but what he did with this hacking kit was able to take pictures of these women in their bedrooms, presumably maybe undressing, that sort of thing, because their webcams were being hacked.
Right, and the women didn't know because the little light didn't go on. So, you know, they felt safe in their private space, and yet they weren't.
Yeah, so that is certainly one thing we can do. That's very simple. Put a piece of tape over that webcam. We are talking about ways to stay safe online with Violet Blue. She is the author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy. She's an investigative tech reporter. She is an award-winning sex writer and columnist. And she is the author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Safe Online. And we're welcoming your questions for her or any experiences that you would like to share about your safety online, your privacy online. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Mary in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I was just wondering, is it any safer to give out your cell phone number compared to, like, your home landline number?
Is it? Is there a difference, Violet?
Well, absolutely. It's absolutely better to give out something that isn't your personal number, something that is sort of a front-facing phone number. So if you have, you know, a lot of people don't have two numbers, so it's great that you do have two numbers. Mm-hmm. And one number is going to be the number that you pick to basically give to social networking sites if you need to do that, or if you need to be in contact with people in the public eye. And then the other phone number is one that you're going to want to basically guard as fiercely as possible. So as long as you have a split between those two numbers and where they're shared and what you do with them, then it's going to be absolutely safe to share the public one, or the one that you're okay with having, you know, public information associated with, but definitely not the private one.
Thanks, Mary. Kristen in Middleton is with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I recently purchased an Amazon Echo, which is a device that it sort of works like Siri on an iPhone. So you just keep the Echo in your house and you talk to it and ask it questions and it helps you. But I've heard from some people that it's sort of like a two-way connection to the internet, and that you're always connected and that others might be able to spy on you through that or listen to you. It doesn't have a camera on it, but it has a microphone. So I'm just wondering if that's true, and if so, how can you protect yourself from that?
I think that's a great question, and that's absolutely something that I've been talking about specifically with people lately. Some of my colleagues have been writing about using the Echo. They love it. They really, really enjoy it as a product. But I can't seem to find anyone in the security field that wants to use one, because I've been wanting to basically write about it from a security perspective, and I cannot convince any of the people that I know that work in information security or any hackers that I know to get one, because they're very concerned about the fact that it is online all the time, that it has permission to record you in your house, and that it transmits that data. So I think it's something to definitely be concerned about, because it's something that I haven't been able to find any answers about. I'm sure, I mean, Amazon security is excellent. You know, Amazon is definitely in the forefront of security. Their security team is incredible. They always have a really strong presence at security conferences. They always hire the best and brightest when it comes to information security and protecting the privacy of their users. So I'm fully confident that they've thought through all of the possible attack vectors on the Echo. However, I haven't been able to talk to anybody who has any in-the-field experience with this thing, or has been able to find out, you know, how that data is being transmitted and how they're keeping that information safe. So I would definitely, you know, I would definitely use it with a bit of caution, for sure.
Thanks, Kristen, for the call. We'll take more of your calls with your questions or concerns or experiences. For Violet Blue, author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, in just a moment, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're going to talk about online dating sites and our safety and privacy coming up next. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with the author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Safe Online. Violet Blue is giving us some advice for men and women on how we can protect ourselves, our information, and our privacy. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have Monette on Facebook who says, I signed up for eHarmony and was not given an opportunity to use a made-up name for the site. My real first name and hometown were used. Since my name is unusual, it is easy to find me just by Googling me. I called eHarmony, and I had to really complain before they changed it. As a result, I also cannot be officially verified, which is a part of the more expensive service that I pay for. I have also found out that men are surprised and sometimes offended that I won't give them my real name. What about that, Violet?
Well, that just set off about a million alarms for me. I'm really surprised and very disappointed with eHarmony. eHarmony has It's interesting that eHarmony is doing that, because eHarmony has a really good online guide to protecting your privacy while dating online, and I often recommend it. But forcing people to use their real names, and especially in a way that discloses their real names and their locations, is absolutely something that they should not be doing, because it really puts the majority of their users in danger. That's really bad. It's one thing if they want to verify you for a service and keep that, but that they keep that hidden and allow you to determine, you know, what level of privacy that you have around your real name and your location and other bits of personal information. It should always be up to the consumer. It should never be up to the business what control is had over that. So I understand if they wanted to have that for verification for, you know, one of their premium services, but it shouldn't be something that you can't undo and can't reverse.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, what I would recommend doing is shutting down the profile altogether and also filing a complaint, with the Better Business Bureau and contacting some privacy agencies, because this is something that is going to particularly put especially domestic violence victims at high risk. So that's really disappointing and very unfortunate. In terms of dating sites, you know, I want to address her question, too, about, you know, men who are giving her grief for not telling them her real name or her information. Those guys, you don't want to date anyway, because if they're already pressuring you to loosen your boundaries about personal boundaries that are important to you, that's only going to get worse if you decide to spend time with them or if you date them. So I think that's a really good red flag for ladies in general. If a guy's pressuring you to give it more information about yourself online than you want to at that time, then drop him like a hot potato, because that guy's not going to respect your boundaries about anything else. And I think that, you know, it's easy for us, too, to think like, oh, it's just my name. Like, what's the big deal? But these boundaries are important, you know, and these boundaries are our boundaries. So, you know, just... Don't give in to the grief. Don't give in to the guys that are like, oh, just give me your phone number or anything like that. Those guys are creeps. Like I said, if they don't respect your boundaries now, they're definitely not going to respect them later.
Right. What about just using our real names in general, not just for online dating, but for online interaction? Should we be using fake names or trying to?
Well, it's a matter of context, of course. If you're on Facebook and you have your profile set to private, or if you have your profile set in a way that you're only communicating with people that you want to know your real name, that's fine. You know, or if you're a person who goes through the world totally okay with people knowing their real name and having it associated with their workplace and their family and all of that, that's fine too. You know, unfortunately, for instance, 1 in 4 women are domestic violence victims in the United States today. And using social networking sites with their real names puts them and their families in danger. So we have a significant amount of the population that does have to make a very serious risk assessment about whether or not they're using their real names on Facebook and what to do when something like Facebook or eHarmony demands their real information. Because like I said, that puts them in danger. So, you know, it's a matter of context, and it's also a matter of doing a personal risk assessment.
Yeah, I know that Facebook is making it more difficult to use fake names, and I know, like, newspaper chat columns are trying to make people more and more use their real names rather than fake names. Does that trend worry you?
It does worry me. It worries me a great deal. Like I said, I mean, it's, you know, according to the National Network to End Domestic Violence, 1 in 4 women in America are domestic abuse survivors, and. You know, NNEDV just recently released a report working with service providers, people who, you know, who provide all sorts of services, whether it's legal services or care services to domestic violence victims. They just released a big report on how abusers are misusing technology. And the report found that nearly all of the responding programs, 99% of the programs, reported that Facebook is the most misused social media platform by abusers, period. Like, this report just came out about a month ago, so it hasn't really hit the news. And when you take that into account, and you take into account that Facebook is forcing people to use their real names in some cases, Facebook is actually changing people's names for them now and putting their real name on their profiles without their consent. I mean, that's, I don't want something bad to happen for that awareness to be raised to the point that that policy gets changed so people don't get hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is something that's a developing story right now. And I really don't want to see, you know, people harassed or more victims to be made before the impact of sharing this information is finally understood.
We are talking with Violet Blue. She is author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Safe Online. And we welcome your questions for her. We welcome any stories you might have. Have you ever had your personal information hacked online? Have you ever been hacked or experienced identity theft? What do you do to try to stay safe on the internet? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Mark in Cottage Grove is with us next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I just had a quick story. So I had a health insurance company a while back, and then I switched health insurance, and I filled out all the forms. And then later I found out that the previous health insurance company had been hacked, and my Social Security number was now out there, and I had already given it to the next health insurance company. And then later I realized that they don't actually need my Social Security number to give me health coverage. And so when my son was born, my wife and I didn't provide his Social Security number because they didn't need it. And it ended up being a giant, it's still going on, months-long battle about coverage because they demanded the Social Security number. They don't need it. And it made me realize that you don't need a computer or the internet to have your information hacked. Someone else is willing to put it out there for you.
Yeah, Mark, and your phone's a little bit staticky. Violet, were you able to handle that?
Yeah, I think I got it.
So you don't even need your own computer for this to be a problem.
Yeah, I think that what he's speaking to is that he doesn't need it to even be the person who's being hacked, mm-hmm. essentially, to have this information get loose out there. And it's incredibly frustrating because we are now finding ourselves in the position of all of these companies having our information and finding out the hard way on the news, mostly, that they have poor security practices, you know, and it's incredibly frustrating. It's a very defeating and very helpless feeling that I think a lot of us are starting to have about this, because our information's out there, and of course we're gonna be careful with it, but large companies and government institutions aren't being careful with it. So, I feel for you. It's trying to protect your son's Social Security number. I mean, thank goodness you're doing that, really, because it's, you know, like I said, we are the last line of defense in these instances.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that. He said that he's, you know, refused to give his son's Social Security number to a health insurer who is now, you know, battling with him over coverage because he didn't do that. How do we fight back if a company or a site is insisting on information we don't want to share?
Unfortunately, right now it's like the Wild West when it comes to our personal information and dealing with businesses that demand it. So, you know, credit card companies are a really great example, you know, where they're increasingly, you know, because they are scrambling to get their business together when it comes to protecting user security, and they're seeing their cards hacked a lot and identity theft happening with their services. They're doing all kinds of crazy invasive things to get people to verify their identities. Like, I've been hearing about credit card companies that are increasingly telling people they need to photocopy their ID or photocopy their Social Security card and not email it in or anything like that, actually physically send it in through the mail. And there are no set policies about this. There are no set laws about this. Of course, you know, the National Privacy Clearinghouse and other places will tell you, you know, don't do this. Don't give your ID to these companies. Don't give your, you know, your driver's license number to these companies or anything like that. But it's increasingly hard to avoid when we need to live our day-to-day lives, you know, when we need to actually use that credit card, but they won't let us use it until we give them some piece of personal information they've never asked for before. So it's unfortunately, like I said, it's the Wild West, and these businesses are kind of scrambling to make up security protocols as they go along. And I think that you know, being vigilant, as our caller is, about his son's Social Security number is especially important at this time, and being vigilant for as long as possible until, you know, until things start to change and we're better protected, not only from hackers, but also from these companies.
So let's say we've been hacked, or a company that we use has been hacked. We are the victim of identity theft. What do we do now?
Okay, basically what you need to do is you need to lock down everything that had contact with whatever was hacked. Again, like, you know, there's, of course, a big chapter in the Smart Girls Guide to Privacy about that takes you step by step through exactly what to do when you've been hacked or when one of your accounts is in one of those big data breaches. And there's also a big list of resources in the book to help you get through the mess. But essentially what you want to do is you want to take a look at whatever it was that was hacked or compromised and make a list of every piece of information that was in that. And also make a list of any accounts that might have been connected. And what I mean by connected is, you know, if it was an account that was connected to a bank account or a checking account, or if it was an account that was connected to a social media service, and take a look at the email address that was associated with that account, the phone number that might be associated with that account, any bits of information, essentially. And what you're going to want to do is just to start to lock those things down. So any account that account was connected to, change the password immediately. Change them right away. Change them to something pretty complicated. Also, I highly recommend using password managers because passwords are such a nightmare, and they are so complicated, and they're so easy to forget, and they throw us into such a rage. Password managers like 1Password or LastPass or KeePass, they have great security. They're encrypted, so they store your passwords in very wonderful, deep encrypted ways, and they manage your passwords for you. So take a look at the account that was compromised. Every account that touches it, change the passwords for everything. And then take a look at the other pieces of identifying information that were associated with that account, like the email address. So you may want to see what other places you've used that email address, especially if you've used that email address in conjunction with the same passwords on other sites. Because what the criminals are going to want to do is start to find as many other services that you have and see if they can make those passwords match, see if they can make that information match up.
You know, we have less than a minute to go, and I wanted to see if you see our online world changing down the road in a way that would make our privacy and security easy or harder to maintain.
I think that things are going to get worse before they get better, unfortunately, especially when it comes to at-risk populations and the issues around real names, and also around banking and around security, around things like our social security numbers. I don't think that our government can move fast enough right now to be able to protect us. And I just don't think that they're able to protect us in a way that we need it immediately. However, the private sector is stepping up in an amazing way, you know, with things like password managers, which is such a simple thing that people can do to protect themselves. So I think things are going to get much better, but they're probably going to get a little bit worse before that, unfortunately.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yes, it was. A lot of good information. Violet Blue is the author of The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, Practical Tips for Staying Safe Online. She's also an investigative tech reporter and award-winning sex writer and columnist. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. Hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We will learn tomorrow at this time about factors that discourage women from becoming programmers with the producers of a new documentary that's coming up tomorrow at this time. This is the Ideas Network.